Hello everyone, you're all very welcome along to another episode of the Irish Farmers Journal Young Stock Podcast. My name is Declan Collins, dairy specialist here with the Journal, and I'll be this week's host, where we'll be joined by Robert Tobin, dairy farmer just outside Arklow, County Wicklow. Robert has calved down 200 cows this spring in two milking platforms alongside his parents on 90% leased land. We're going to chat about Robert's decision to get into dairy farming back in 2019. We'll talk about the mindset needed and the sacrifices when it comes to dairy farming. And we'll also chat about Robert's Instagram page, Tobin Farms. I started off by asking Robert to give us an overview of where the farm is at today, how the spring has gone so far, and some challenges they've faced along the way. So Robert, if you just start off by giving us an overview of where you are at the moment with farm, cow numbers, how spring is going then as well. It's been definitely a wet and challenging spring where you are with silage stock levels and grazing.
We're farming in County Wicklow on the east coast, outside Arklow. We're in a limited company. It's myself and my mother and my father at home full time. And then we have relief staff there as well for milking and during the spring. So we're milking 200 cows will be the plan to milk this year. We're on 90% rented ground. We're on very heavy soils. There's a little vein of soil that runs up along the east coast there called Macamore, and it's very poor drainage. It goes well grass, but quite poor drainage. So this spring has been unbelievably challenging. Cows would have went in last October, 10th of October, and they haven't been out for half an hour since. And today is the 12th of March. So no grazing done whatsoever. The weather certainly hasn't been suited itself.
Just to give us an idea of figures then, when you say like it can grow grass, what kind of tonnage are you growing every year, and kind of kilos of milk solids, and what kind of meal are you feeding in as well?
You'd be averaging 14 tonne dry matter. So where I knew, we converted there in 2019, so we haven't got 10 years worth of figures for you, but in the last 6 years we'd have averaged about 14 tonne dry matter, because we wouldn't burn up as quick in the summertime. We are wet in the shoulders, so we end up feeding a little bit more meal. The plan when I came home from college was 500 kilos of meal and the rest in grass and silage, but we haven't managed to hit that. We'd average probably 800 kilos of meal a year. Some years you go up to a ton, and more years you do 600 kilos. It just depends on how long they stay over the autumn and how early they get out in the spring. Crossbred herds, the Jersey cross, probably 30% Jersey or that. Started with a herd of heifers, and have been building numbers every year. Started with 70 the first year. And like I said, we've milked 200 now, and we pretty much built those out of our own stock. So we've had a heap of heifers every year. So our milk solids have been below where we would have liked. It's been slow to get going and all the rest. We did 475 kilos last year. But this year we've got a lot of mature cows in the herd this year, and we'd hope to hit that 500 kilos. Something I've been dreaming about since I left college in 2018.
Just going back to that, you were saying, starting off in 2019, just going from what I know about you, you're very new to the farm and started off with a couple of bulls and a few ewes. Just tell us how this all came along and how you got into farming.
2011, my mother inherited her whole farm, 50 acres of a farm, rough farm now, and like I said, on poor ground. My father was a mechanic at the time, and he was, as soon as they inherited the farm, he took payment for doing a job on a tractor. The payment was 8 Friesian bull calves, and he used that to stock the farm from the start. They went off then and they bought 18 lamb ewes and sort of went for there. The two of them then worked unbelievably hard out there every year since 2011. Every few pounds that came from the farm went straight back into it, and they sort of built it up. I would have farmed then at the weekends and stuff from 2011. I wouldn't have grown up on a farm, so I would have been probably, you know, 13 or 14, that time when we started farming. But I sort of got bitten by the bug then, and when I left school, I wanted to go do an ag science degree, and my plan was to get a job somewhere off-farm related to agriculture. So I went to Waterford Institute of Technology and did a level A in ag science down there. At the weekends then, in order to get a few pounds for a bit of drinking during the week, I decided to go milk cows. I had never milked cows before, and very good neighbours of ours had a big herd of cows, were milking 300 cows at the time. I said I'd love to go there. Went there weekends, used to do full day on a Saturday and milkings on a Sunday, and loved cows, fell in love with milking cows. In my third year of college then in WIT, we got the opportunity to do, you had to do 12 week work placement. You were allowed to go to New Zealand for your 12 weeks if you wanted to. And the way the 12 weeks worked was, it was from January to May, and then you had your summer holidays to come home. But I decided to stay over there for May till September. So I actually got 9 months over there. working on a 1,500 cow farm in Canterbury. While I was over there, then my father was approached by the neighbouring farmer. They were looking to lease out the farm. We only had 50 acres at the time. They were looking to lease out their farm. My father sort of, we hadn't made a plan for me coming home farming or anything full time. He just, you know, he was going to do something with it. So he decided to go ahead and he took down a long-term lease in 2017, that was. As soon as we got that down, it sort of upped our land area by 2/3. So, and it was all in the one block, just split by a road. So we kind of, I left college then and I was eager to go milk cows now. So I wasn't going to get a job somewhere. I was going to go either become a manager on a dairy farm, or now there had been an option to sort of get the help at home. So we looked at that, sort of sat down and with Chagas and came up with a plan for getting into cows. So we started that build in 2018. There was no infrastructure on either of the farms, really. There wasn't even really housing facilities at home. So we had to do it all. It all had to be reseeded, fenced, roads, water, slurry storage, milk and power, cubicles, everything. Greenfield sites, might as well say, only we used the yard that was already there. In 2019, then, the three of us, myself, my mother and father, started milking cows, 70 heifers, and we started growing from there then.
Just looking back at all of that, for a young person in a similar position now, what's the one piece of advice now that you'd give to them starting off?
Well, make a plan. Make a plan that sort of stands up no matter what sort of problems you can think about facing. Because even when you have all your problems laid out and this could happen and that could happen, you still won't tick all the boxes or come up with all the issues that you'll face. So make a good plan. Make sure you get unbelievably good advice and have really, really good people around you there at the end of the phone. And people who want to see you do well, they can be hard to find at times. But if you can get them, they'll be worth so much to you. They'll save you money. They'll save you stress, they'll take some of the pressure off your own shoulders. Having that group of people there is so, so important. But yeah, plan and good people are probably two of the main things. And then don't be afraid to make lots of mistakes when you're at, and you definitely don't want to be afraid to work hard. You know, you're going to have to, you want to do something, if something's worth doing and you really want to do it, then you're going to make sacrifices and work hard if it's what you want to do. But you can achieve a lot by just, you know, having the right people around you, making some sacrifices and working hard.
You said that there about working hard. There is a perception out there that dairy is kind of this slave labor trade. What are you doing on the farm at the moment, we say, to give yourself a work-life balance?
The ultimate model for a work-life balance on a dairy farm is the family farm model. So if you have family labor available, then everyone's involved in the farm and there's family labor there, then everyone will get their time off. There's no doubt dairy is a tough job if you're on your own. Unbelievably, I don't believe I'd milk cows if I was at home on my own. We do a rota up and it's stuck to, but when we only had one milking parlour, it was important that everyone only milked once a day, that there was no one in the parlour twice a day. We had, everyone gets a day and a half a week off. So if I get Saturday off and it's a lunchtime Sunday off, then my mother and father will get from lunchtime Sunday off and all day Monday off, and that's every week. And everyone will get their 21 or 23 days holidays if it's booked in advance. And if you can be organized, it's very much about being organized. If any other business can be organized, give everyone time off and get their days, if you have the staff there or the labor units, then it's very much possible to do it, because there's no reason you can't do it if another company is doing it, you know.
Definitely, that probably is a massive thing, and it probably is something that's lacking in a lot of dairy farms at the moment, which keeping and retaining staff, in that farms are getting bigger and probably that everything else isn't following. I see there, Kelly's there with you as well, and she's not actually from a farm background either. And
Kelly's a fantastic story.
That's probably a testament to you as well. She's kind of grown into the business in her own right as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My mother used to run an equine business there where she taught horse riding lessons, and Kelly started there, I think she was 5 years old when she started. We're beside a fairly big town, and she came from the town to learn how to ride horses. And she stayed there, learned how to ride horses, and then she started helping out with the horses. And when we got into cows in 2019, we were rearing calves, obviously, and she sort of, every Saturday, there used to be lessons for the day, and she'd go down the yard, you know, to get a look at these calves, see what needed to be done with them, and sort of got an interest in the calves, and kind of went from there then. I think last year, or the year before, 2 years ago, she took on the role of calf rearing. She did a full calf rearing season with, but Kelly's from Arctic Town, no family history of agriculture whatsoever on either side of her family, but really loves animals. I remember the first morning she came out to rear the calf. You know, you walk into a calf shed, there's unique smells, they say, in the calf shed, from milk, you know, to calves. There's a lot going on, but she nearly passed out the first morning when she was there. I'll never forget, all the colour drained out of her face, she turned green, and I really didn't think she was going to make it. But from then on, she just went from strength to strength, and now we're in a position where we've got two herds of cows now. Kelly milks for the entire milking season on one of the farms. She does 4 days a week milking there, and she does the full calf rearing season, this morning and evening, most days of the week, and absolutely loves it. You know, she's as much or more of a farmer than any of us are, and she's as interested in the business and how we do things as we are. I don't know what makes us a great place to work in, maybe not, in, she's sort of involved in everything that we do. She knows the plan with what we're doing with animals. We bring her along. Pace isn't even that fantastically well set up, but we kind of, she won't put jobs that we wouldn't do, which sometimes you can see on some farms, you know, the labor units, as they're called in most farms, are given the jobs that no one else wants to do. And it's very hard. If you wouldn't do the job yourself for the day, I think it's very hard to expect someone else then that has no ties to your business to put in the effort to do that job then themselves.
You mentioned there about the second farm that you're after taking on. That is something that's growing in the industry a lot, taking on leaf farms and second units. What's the biggest challenge you've seen so far with taking on the second unit?
Oh, getting organized is the biggest thing, the second unit. We already had a lease model, so, you know, we're very lucky. We've got two extremely good landlords. We've got a family that we're renting one farm off, and they're fantastic. And then we've got a man that we're renting the new farm off, who used to live there himself. And look, we get on extremely well with them. They're very reasonable. It works. The thing with leasing land is that, you know, it has to work for both parties. Everyone has to be happy with what's going on. So we have to be happy to work with them, and they have to be happy with what we're doing with the farm. So, you know, we'll have invested an awful lot of money into both farms, so the value of their assets is going up, and we have to be able to go in and turn into work every day and be happy with the price we're paying for the land, and be happy to work with the landlords every day on the land that we're working. So, you know, it definitely has to work both ways. But getting organized for the second year was probably the biggest thing around, you know, what cows go where are you going to calve, organizing, you know, time and time for milking and getting all the rest of the sort of jobs done. Outside of that then, I suppose budgets are fierce important. If you're taking on an awful lot more lease land, we doubled our land area with the second lease. So, doing your budgets and sticking to them, you know, is very important. You have to be sort of strict in that area. And then you sort of just have to get on with it then and learn as you go along. There's stuff we'll do this year that we didn't do last year, you know, and try and improve a little bit every year as you go ahead.
You said there just about doubling your land area. Like, how did you go about expanding then? Was it organically, or did you buy in, or how did you do that?
We carried enough heifers, so we grew organically through our own young stock. Yeah.
The big following now on Instagram as well, just under 3,000 followers. Nearly an ambassador for the dairy industry. One thing I see about you, and it's probably a reason why I brought you on, is you're really not afraid to speak your mind, and you say it as it is. What have you seen from going on Instagram and social media, I suppose, more than Instagram so far?
I think Instagram, out of all the social media platforms, Instagram is my favorite because it seems to have the best community on it. Twitter, try Twitter for a while, I think it brings out the worst in people. It's probably the way the app is laid out. You just seem to get the absolute worst of what people have to offer on Twitter. But Instagram, we have a fantastic group on Instagram. You talk to maybe 5 of the same people every day. You're constantly getting ideas off of people, seeing how people are doing things differently than you're doing, improving. Instagram is good that way, because just purely the way it's laid out, you have stories and posts. People post stories every day, which are pictures of what they're doing. So you can pick up stuff on that. You can message them then and talk to them about it. And then if you want to get sort of points across and stuff, you can set up posts on Instagram then that are a little bit longer in words, and you can interact that way. So no, I love Instagram, and I follow some fantastic accounts on there. Some great agricultural accounts on Instagram. I could do up a list of people that everyone should be following. You know, some fantastic people out there.
Do you have many followers in that we say aren't from farming backgrounds and things like following?
So far, yeah, the majority of my followers will be from farming background or definitely from rural areas. I'd love to grow the accounts to where I was able to reach some people outside of agriculture, because I could think there's a lot that you can do for agriculture by showing people outside. I know there's people on Instagram that have huge, you know, 20 and 30,000 followers, and they have people from all sorts of diverse backgrounds that can do a lot for agriculture, but Yeah, no, it's mainly farmers.
YouTube then is another thing that's definitely growing within the agricultural industry. Do you ever see yourself going into that?
I have a face for radio. That's the problem. But there's a lot of work into YouTube. A fair play to the people that are doing it, because you have to organize your day and you have to bring cameras with you, and then you take clips and you have to be able to edit it all together. And you can show a much broader view of what you're doing on farm, because you can bring someone with you for the day more than what you can do on Instagram. It's just at the minute, time just isn't there to do it.
There's a lot of red tape now and everything around farming, but a lot of farmers, where does it stop? Coming from a young point or a young farmer's point of view, it's definitely putting a lot of lads off going into farming. Where do you sit on that?
The big thing that I've been frustrated with recently, probably over the past year, is there's an important distinction to make here. For the purpose of this conversation, we said there's a difference between agriculture and farming, right? I get frustrated when I hear people who rely on agriculture for an income telling people who rely on farming for an income that they're very positive about the future in agriculture. You know, we were at a meeting a few weeks ago, and there was a person from a farm organization stood up and said that he refused to believe that agriculture was dying on its feet in Ireland and in Europe, and that he was very positive about the future for agriculture. But for me, I think we're in a position, I'm 28 now, and I left college and went straight home to farm. That year, I think 100 people will say graduated from WIT. Only two of us went home to farm straight away. Everyone else left with the view to get a job for a while first, find their feet, and then return home. Anyone that had farms, then to return home to farm. I can see now where we're probably getting to a position where, you know, there might be nobody doing these ag courses who are in a position to return home to farm. I feel like if you were to sit down with the people that had farms at home that left college and said to them, you know, why haven't you went home to farm straight after college? I think I'd find it hard to hear any of them say, oh, because of the derogation issues, or because of banding with cows, or I'm not going home because of my cows that I want them to be in the wrong band. I just don't think that had happened. I feel like they'll say, I can't make the same income I'll make if I go get a job somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, there's the Enough is Enough campaign that's going on with the IFA at the minute. I think it's a fantastic thing, right? There's protests going on. I think Francie Gorman is a good guy from as much as I've seen of him so far. Enough, I'm watching the videos of the protests and I'm listening to the slogan, and, you know, it's enough of what? If the media talks to some of the reps that are at the certain protests, one rep will say, too much red tape. The person who talks the next day will go, too much environmental restrictions on growth. Someone else will say there was, you know, banding. And, you know, there's a different reason every time they're talking to someone. And I can imagine the government sitting back, looking at that going, oh, this is fantastic. They're protesting and they're unhappy about everything. And they want everything fixed. And the bottom line is we can't fix everything. So the handy thing for us to do then is we'll just keep doing what we're doing. So there's a message being lost there. Now, there's, for me, at the bottom of the whole thing, it's to do with income. So the reason there's unrest all across Europe and in Ireland and where everyone's unhappy with the regulation is to do with income. There's a pile of money in agriculture. Go to the plough match. Just do one spin around and look at every stand and every stall and every rep that's on every stand. Walk into one of the big stands in the plough match, go up to any of the people that are walking inside and ask, are you positive about the future in agriculture? And they're going to look at each other and they're both going to be wearing brown shoes and a puffy jacket and they're going to say, oh, we're very positive about the future. It's fantastic. Right? And why wouldn't they be? They're surrounded by money. The Farmer Journal wrote a piece today, I read this morning. Siobhan Talbot is going to be paid €1 million as a non-compete clause in our contract when she left Plan B, so that she won't go work for another company for 1 year. They're going to pay her €1 million on top of whatever else they're paying her. Now, they were afraid the CFO was going to leave and join her. So they said, oh, if you stick with us for another year, we'll pay you $750,000 on top of your wage. Okay, if you were to get Siobhan Talbot and the CFO in a room today and ask, are you positive about the future of agriculture? They go, oh, we're very positive. It's fantastic. And why wouldn't it be? Yeah. Look what money is there, right? There's nothing to be not positive about. But every single euro that Glanbia is going to pay to those two people, now the 1.75 million euros, all started in the pit of a milking parlour at 5:30 in the morning, or at the headland of a field in a tillage field, a man or a woman lambing a ewe, a sick animal, get up in the middle of the night to calve a cow, every euro that was there started there. There's fantastic money in agriculture and there's no money in farming, is what we're basically trying to say here.
There's definitely a lot to be ironed out there. My following question now is going to divide nations. It's our quick fire round. So Robert, Peter Bale.
Oh, Pete, all the way.
Conventional or sex demon?
Sex. First time you used it this year. Fantastic stuff.
John Deere or Massey?
Massey.
Massey. Holstein or Jersey?
Jersey.
Would you rather milk cows or feed calves?
Oh, milk cows, I don't feed any calves.
That'll wrap up our chat now for this evening, Robert. Thanks for joining us on this week's Young Stock Podcast.
Lovely, Declan, thanks very much.
There are some great insights there into the Tobin family farm, an inspiring story of how a family with limited experience in farming became successful dairy farmers. Again, I'd like to thank Robert for his time and you to the listeners for your time as well. Be sure to tune in to next week for another episode of the Young Stock Podcast.
We're currently looking for young people across Ireland to interview on the podcast. If you know someone who's under the age of 35 that has an interesting story, career or experience that you want to share, then send on their name and get in touch with the Young Farmers Journal team. We want to give a voice to young people across rural Ireland. What issues are currently bothering you? Get in touch by emailing youngstock@farmersjournal.ie or send us a WhatsApp voice note to 086 83 66465.